This class is called Daily Practice Class, and it's different from the other classes. In our tradition, we think it's very important to study spiritual things and to learn a lot about them before you even try to do them. So we emphasize a lot study. The Dalai Lama last two weeks ago when he spoke in Washington, he said, somebody asked him, how should I meditate in the morning? He said, study, 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 you know. And then he said later, start meditating on what you studied, and only later start meditating one pointedly. And that's sort of the way that these classes here are going, the 7-year course that we have here. But and in our tradition, your meditations are more a personal thing that you do by yourself in the morning. In our tradition, meditation is most often something you do privately every day by yourself. Although we do think that it's very good and powerful to meditate in groups, but when you start or as a daily practice, it's mostly done by yourself in your home. So it's important to learn how to do a daily practice in your own home and by yourself, self-governing, self-running, self-policed daily practice. So we're going to go through, there's nothing new here. It'll be the same presentation as in previous months, because it doesn't really change. This is how to do your daily practice. And this is an ancient tradition. What I'm going to teach you of how to do your daily practice is taught in the sutras 2,500 years ago. We still have them, and we still use them. And all of what I say will be based on, except jokes about ice cream and stuff, will be based on the actual sutras from about 2,500 years ago. So I'll go through how to do a daily practice, and we'll make sure that that we do some meditation, that we meditate at least half an hour or 45 minutes during this period, okay? So this will be a series of about 4 or 5 more Monday nights, and during that time we'll go through how to do your meditations and your daily practice. I often teach. I teach almost every night, and then I get... I do these classes for about 3 years, and then I always have somebody coming up to me and saying, what should I meditate on, you know? How should I meditate? You know, and I said, it drives me a little crazy, you know? I say, I just finished, you know, doing it on Monday night for a year, you know? And so this is the time when you get your answer, okay? How you should meditate, right? And then you should do it. So in our tradition, the real work of meditation is not something that a lama can do for you, can teach you how to do it. But you have to be disciplined enough to do it yourself. People ask me, how easy is it to see emptiness directly, which is the big goal of this meditation, right? It's about the same as learning to play piano very well, okay? Like becoming a concert pianist or a concert dancer or something like that, you know. It takes about that much dedication. And it's not, I mean, even in the fields of music or dance, No teacher can do it for you. The students who succeed are the ones who learn to do their own scales and learn to do their own pirouettes and over and over and over again by themselves. No coach or teacher can push you to do it all day. You have to be self-motivating. What's the function or what's the purpose of doing a daily practice? The main goal is to see emptiness directly and to develop compassion. Okay. What happens if you see emptiness directly? First of all, emptiness is some kind of ultimate reality that's been around you and is around you your whole life, and you haven't seen it yet if you're a normal person in this room. If you're able in this lifetime before you die to see it directly, then on that same day, but the experience, as I've said many times, takes about 20 minutes. It takes many years of preparation to get ready for it. Or maybe less than many years if you're very serious. Later in that day, you see directly your own enlightenment. You see the day that you will become a Buddha, and you know what they will call you and what they won't call you when you become a Buddha. You see Buddhas. You see the real nature of a Buddha. You meet the Buddhas directly. You know that you will have a future life, and you know how many you will have, and you know what will happen roughly during those lives. You have a pretty clear perception of what will be going on during those lives. And that's all like some kind of amazing thing. I mean, imagine if you knew those things already. You know, imagine what it would be like. if you knew what would happen beyond your death. And imagine what it would be like if you knew you would be eventually become an enlightened being, and you knew pretty much the year in which it would happen. Imagine if you knew those things. You can only get to see those things if you learn to meditate deeply. You can only learn to meditate deeply if you practice about an hour a day at it. Okay, at least an hour to 2 hours is good. But those doors are closed to you if you don't have a daily practice. If you don't meditate every day, if you don't have a normal practice in which to meditate, you'll never see those things. And I always say, to me, the most frustrating thing isn't, it's almost not so frustrating that you don't see them, it's that you probably will die not believing in those things, you know? Like, you'll never know for sure if there are enlightened beings. You'll never know for sure if you could have done it. You'll never know for sure if there really is a future life. You'll never know for sure if there is such a thing as a Buddha. You know, there could be people sitting next to you tonight who start the same time you do and who see all those things directly. And then you'll be one of those people that dies wondering, you know, if it was true or not. You know what I mean? And that, to me, that's more frustrating than not getting there, you know? It's to die and not know that it was there, and it was there all the time, and you didn't have time to spend an hour a day on your meditation, you know. So it takes some kind of discipline, and in our tradition, the tradition of the Dalai Lamas, we don't enforce it. We don't, you know, have public meditations in Sera Monastery where everybody has to come. We don't do it that way. Your lama teaches you privately your daily practice, and then it's up to you to do it. And that's all they do in the monastery. There's no like, they beat you for other things, but not for not meditating, okay? So, all right. So, we'll be going through how to do a basic meditation. I think most people, by the way, that's the benefit of meditation, okay? During that same experience of emptiness, most people have a parallel experience of bodhicitta or ultimate love. Which would also be wonderful to have. I mean, everybody in the world would like to have the mind frame of a Jesus or a Mother Teresa or something like that. I mean, it's an attractive state of mind. You can imagine it, but you can't quite have it, right? And on that day, you will have it. And on that day, you do experience it. So, you know, most people during that experience, if you're trained properly, you also have an experience of the ultimate love that a Buddha has. So, these are the goals of a daily practice. It's not so much to be calm. It's not so much to be more, you know, focused at work, or it's not so much to do your worldly work better. I mean, the real reason to have a daily practice is that all of these things that I've talked about happen to you. And then eventually, if you do it well, in this lifetime, you can become some kind of an enlightened being or a holy being, by practicing Tantra during your private practice. So these are the real goals of a daily practice. And this class is not a yoga class. This is not a class about, you know, watching your breath for the rest of your life or learning to be calm or something like that. Those are side effects. They happen. But this class is more a quite serious attempt to be able to meditate deeply and see your future life, see emptiness directly, create your own enlightenment, okay? Create the enlightened being that you will be. So that's the goal of this class. It's not so much an intellectual class as a class in the technique of doing this. And the technique comes from the preliminaries to meditation come from texts that were written by Lord Buddha. So we'll be going through those. That's my pitch for learning to meditate, okay? If you do it, you have a decent chance of seeing emptiness and of getting to nirvana in this lifetime. If you don't do it, you cannot see emptiness and you cannot reach nirvana. Okay, so it's impossible without practicing daily. Okay, unless you get really good at meditating, to see those things I talked about is totally impossible. And you know, the frustrating thing is you'll be one of those people that never knew that it was possible. Okay, so you have to try. Okay, so second thing. When we talk about meditation in our tradition and in Buddhism, and I think what many people don't realize in the West is that the preparation for the meditation is as important as the meditation. So actually the scriptures that teach meditation spend a lot more time on preparing how to meditate than the actual meditation. Okay? So there are practices that we do to get ready for meditation. And when people, you know, Westerners, a certain percentage try to meditate and give up within a week. Another percentage try for about a month and give up. Another percentage tries for year after year and doesn't get anywhere, nothing. They don't see any tantric deities. They don't have any direct perception of emptiness. They just go from year to year kind of in a fuzzy state, or nothing much changes in their life. This is a sign that they were not trained in the proper preliminaries. You have to know the warm-up to a proper meditation. You have to get in the right frame of mind to meditate properly. If you just sit down on a couch after you got back from work and try to meditate, it won't work. It doesn't work. According to our tradition, it's impossible. Okay? If you just sit there and watch your breath for 2 or 3 years, we also say it doesn't help you much. Okay? There are certain content of the meditation that you have to have. Okay? So we're going to go slowly through the preliminaries of meditation, and then we'll do a little bit of meditation each time. But it'll probably take 2 or 3 weeks just to go through how to prepare yourself for meditation. Okay? First preparation is that your environment should be good for meditation. So it's very important to have a special place in your house where you do your morning meditation. By the way, morning is a good time, or if for you evening is better. I have some students who work late at night, and they find evening is better for them. Most people I know prefer the morning because it's quiet. But the important thing is to get up at the same time every day. Okay, the important thing is to have your meditation at the same time every day. I worked for 15 years at this company, and we had lunch at 1 o'clock. And so ever since then, at 1 o'clock, I get hungry, you know. It doesn't matter how much I ate at 12 o'clock, you know, at 1 o'clock, I get hungry. At 5 o'clock, I fall asleep, because that was when I was on the bus sleeping, you know, commuting back to New Jersey. So, I mean, for years, it was like that. Meditation should be like that. There should be a particular time of the day that you choose for your meditation, okay? Morning is good because your mind is clear. You get your space ready. You get a space in your house where you're going to say, this is my meditation space. If you live in a one-room apartment, which most people do, set aside a corner out of it and make it a holy place. That's your sacred place, okay? And that should be just for your meditation. Never try to meditate on your bed, okay? Your bed has all these sleeping vibrations on it, and as soon as you sit on it, then your mind gets dull, okay? So don't try to sit up in bed and meditate. It doesn't work, okay? Have a place off to the side which you dedicate for your meditation. Make sure that place is clean and beautiful. I mean, if someone came in your room, then they'd say, oh, they must be doing something special in this corner. This corner looks different. You know, it should be like that. Something special about that corner of the house. It's our tradition that when you wake up in the morning, and your practice actually starts, in Tantra, your practice starts just before you wake up and during waking up and then after that. And I can't teach you that yet. Okay, we'll do that some other time. But for a normal person doing personal daily practice, you get up. They say it's important to wash your mouth out or brush your teeth, okay? They advise to have some kind of liquid, like juice. Tibetans like tea or something like that. It's good for you. Some water or something like that. Go in the bathroom and clean out your nose, okay? In Tibetan monasteries, they teach you to just put your face down in the sink, turn on the water, and blow as hard as you can out of your nose, okay? And they don't use toilet paper or paper or anything like that. You get a lot more out, okay? Your nostrils have to be clear, okay, to have a good meditation. If you have a bad cold, you can breathe through your mouth, but otherwise, normally we breathe through our nose. And when you do deeper practices, and very, very deep tantric practices, it's very delicate how the air is coming in and out of your nose, which nostril you're using, like that. All sorts of different practices. So it's good to get used to breathing through your nose. So you clear, you know, they teach you in a monastery at 4 o'clock in the morning, everybody's cleaning. It sounds kind of weird. You know, 2,000 guys blowing their nose but you clear out everything you can from your nose. And don't be shy about it. Make it clear. Then clean up the sink. All right. And then, come back to your room. And it's a custom to, clean the floor and clean the room, even if it's already clean. If you do this every day, it's going to be clean already. But just as an exercise, you clean it. while you're cleaning it, you imagine that you're cleaning your mind. And then you just clean it anyway. You just make it clean. And the exercise of standing up and bending over and sweeping and everything like that, it gets your body a little bit loose, okay? Like that. Then you get a special cushion. You find a cushion that is the kind you like. You know, everybody has their own butt, you know, and everybody has their own thing that they feel sitting on. And you should experiment, okay? You should try many different kinds of cushions. In general, the scriptures say that the most important thing is that the back of the cushion should be higher than the front of the cushion. Okay, so right under your backbone, that should be slightly raised. And then as it comes down to your legs, it should start to slope down. So whatever you use should be higher in the back and then smaller in the front. It should be a cushion where you're not like, how do you call that? Like you're not wobbling, okay? Like sometimes you see these Zen cushions which are really hard and high, and then when you get on it, you feel like you might fall off or something like that, okay? You take out some of the filler. That's what I did, and it works okay, all right? It's important, and most people don't understand or realize that under your ankle, you should have another cushion. That's what these flat cushions are for, okay? These big ones, these big square ones. So a lot of people like to have two different cushions. There's one big rectangular or square one, which keeps your knees and your ankles off the floor. When people have their legs fall asleep or their feet start to hurt, it's often because they don't have a cushion under their legs. Okay, like they're sitting on a cushion, but their legs are on the bare floor on a thin carpet. So they should be on a cushion. Okay, and that way you'll find that you can meditate a lot longer because you know those knobs in your ankles. I have very big ones. Okay. They don't like grind into the floor and then your legs start to hurt or your legs fall asleep or something like that. So have a big cushion underneath and then a cushion under your butt that's raised in the back, okay? It's traditional in our lineage that you also have some kind of altar set up, okay? You don't have to be a Buddhist yet. It doesn't have to be a Buddhist altar if you're not ready for that. But there should be some kind of altar that has some kind of holy being's image on it that you find inspiring, or someone who is holy or sacred for you. So there should be an altar, and there should be some holy being on that. We say it's good to put a holy book there also, because that represents the best part of a holy being, which is that they teach us verbally, you know, that they come to this planet and they say something. So we always put a book up there to represent their speech, and then we put a picture up there to represent their body. And then we put a little stupa sometimes to represent their mind, like a little offering shrine or something like that. But in fact, the word for an altar in Tibetan is kusum tukten, which means a platform for holy body, holy speech, holy mind, like that. And so it should be something like that, okay? In some traditions, it's a custom to stare at the picture of the holy being or something like that. It's not a Buddhist tradition to do that. Meditation is a mental thing. Meditation, out of the six consciousnesses, which are eye, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind, meditation is only a mental consciousness. We don't listen to music when we meditate. We don't stare at a picture while we meditate. We don't stare at a flame. We don't try to breathe incense in or something like that. In ideal meditation, you are withdrawn from your senses. Okay, you are gone deep inside. You can't hear anything, you can't taste anything, you're not looking at anything. Those are all very, very rough consciousnesses. To look at a picture or to listen to a music or something is 100 times more rough than the very subtle mind consciousness. The point of meditation is to bring all the mind deep into the heart and deep into the mind and remove yourself from the outer world. So in our tradition, we don't stare at a picture or something like that. You know, in between meditation sessions, you can, if you don't remember what your lama's right eyebrow looks like, you can pull out a picture, you know, because you're having trouble visualizing it or something like that. But we don't, in our tradition, during meditation, you shut down your sense organs because they're so rough. You can't concentrate while you're concentrating on your sense organs. So that's not the point. So then you have an altar. What's I found is good is to have the images up high enough that if my eyes are slightly open, I'm not seeing them. And then I found useful is to put a a cloth in front of the altar. Most people's rooms are so small that I think you're going to be pretty close to your altar. And then, you know, a lot of my students are piled up two or three in a room. But anyway, then you have a nice plain cloth in front of the altar. Like if you have a flower patterns or paisley or something like that, it can just tend to distract you. But to have nice to have one solid color in front of your eyes, okay? Then you sit down on your cushion. In our tradition, we bow to the holy image, okay, before you sit down. We don't believe that Buddha or Jesus or anything else is living in that frame, on that paper, you know, in those chemicals. We don't believe that. We don't believe there's really a holy being hiding in that picture frame, okay? It's kind of flat in there, you know, it'd be uncomfortable. But we imagine that they are in the room, and we imagine that they are standing there, for example, where the altar is, and then we bow down to them, okay? And the minute you imagine that you are there, according to Buddhist scripture, they are there because they can read your mind, and they knew about a million years ago you were going to ask, and they are just ready, and they move at the speed of thought. So they are there the minute you think of them and wish they were there, they're there, whether you can see them or not. So then you bow down and you do your prostrations there. If you know how to do prostrations, fine. If not, you can just make a bow. But that's to acknowledge that there are other beings in the room, other beings in the universe. You may not know them. You may not be able to see them. But they're there, and they're going to help you. Okay? That's an important part of the meditation. Right? Then you sit down on your cushion. By the way, you should also make some kind of offering. Okay, like a flower is beautiful, or some kind of fruit. I like Cheerios, so I try to put some Cheerios, something like that, cookies, stuff like that. In the Tibetan tradition, we put out bowls of water because there's something pure about water, and there's something about water that you'll never... There's no money. There's no money connected with water. Water is totally free. Water is totally clear. Water is totally pure, and it's just a beautiful offering. There's no money or other motivation involved. It's just a pure, beautiful thing that's all around the planet and everybody uses every day. So we put out bowls of water, okay? Then you sit down straight, okay, your backbones. They say that your back should be like a stack of coins, okay? Like a stack of golden coins, okay? And there are some scriptures teach seven, some scriptures teach eight different parts of the posture. It's called the posture of Vairochana. And this is a Buddha, a particular Buddha. So the first part of that posture is to sit up straight. Okay, this is very important later when you practice the secret teachings. In the non-secret teachings, they make fun of being too much worried about your body. And then when you get to the secret teachings, they say, we were just kidding. And you have to take good care of your body. It's very important to have good posture and to be healthy and to take good care of your body because you can get enlightenment in this life through certain inner channels and other parts of your inner spiritual body, which is connected to your outer body. So your outer body has to be straight and very healthy. Okay, and then there should be your shoulders should be level. Okay. I have some students who start going like that during the meditation. They start raising one shoulder, and then pretty soon they're like that. Okay, the plane should be straight. Okay, I have other students who end up meditating like that. You know, by the end of the session. Okay, the head should be like this. Okay, the head should be straight out like your eyes. If you were looking like that, most people tend to put their chin down, and that, according to us, it hurts your channels and you start getting sleepy, okay? So, you know, make sure your head doesn't start drifting down, okay? After you take your posture, because of gravity, your body will start slumping again. And then every few minutes you have to be aware of that and straighten back up, just slightly. Don't do it in one big motion like that, but just slowly straighten yourself up so it doesn't disturb you or the people around you, okay? It's very important eventually that you learn not to move during meditation, okay? That you should not move during meditation. At the beginning, when you're first learning, it's okay to move a little bit, okay? So those are the parts of the posture. Your head should be like that. It helps a little bit to bend slightly forward at the waist, okay? So it helps keep you awake, all right? And it's nice to imagine like something right about here that's like somebody's tied, glued some string to your head and they're pulling it like about like that, and it keeps your body straight. And, you know, sometimes you just imagine that someone's got a lasso on your forehead and they're pulling just slightly so that it helps to sit just slightly forward, okay? Then there's a trick of your, by the way, it's not good to go back too far either. Okay? Like that's not good and that's not good, okay? How do you keep your eyes? The scriptures say that you can close your eyes if it's not distracting to you. Some people, if you didn't get enough sleep the night before, or if you ate too much in the last 2 hours, if you close your eyes, you'll get sleepy, okay? So then keep them open. You don't keep them open like that. You keep them open like you close them and then you crack them open just a touch. And you keep them focused around here, okay? The scriptures say at the level of your nose. And then some Westerners mistranslated it and said stare at the tip of your nose. Now, all these people I know who cross-eyed because of that, okay? It's not like that, okay? You just focus them loosely around here, okay? So I think for very long-term meditation, you'll find that you can meditate longer if you crack your eyes open slightly and look down, okay? And you're not focusing on anything. Try not to have anything in your visual field that would distract you, okay? So your head is like that, and your eyes are down. Don't let your head go down when you turn your eyes down. Some people, I say, open your eyes a crack. They go like that. And then I say, put your eyes down and they go like that. You know, don't do that, okay? The chin should be up. The head should be erect. Head shouldn't be tilted either way. And then just open your eyes a crack and focus them down. If that becomes uncomfortable, like your eyes start to dry out or something, you can close them. Or if it's too distracting, you can close them. The scripture is very clear that you can do either one, whichever is comfortable for you. A lot of meditation posture is a personal thing. Everybody's body is different. So you have to find the posture which is correct for you. This is the classic posture, but if you have a problem with your knee, like you were in a skiing accident, or you have a problem with your back or something like that, and if it's really painful to sit in this posture, the scripture says, for God's sake, then don't sit like that. Okay? It's very clear. Why? I mean, you'll start meditating on the pain in your knee. And you'll stop meditating on this holy object, okay? So the point is, if something about your body starts to cry out louder than the meditation object, then you should change your position, okay? If your knees start making so much pain that you can't concentrate on your meditation, then the books are very clear. They say, then stick your knees out or lean back on a couch or sit in an easy chair or whatever, but don't do kupa utsu. Kupa utsu means don't do some stupid, foolish, obstinate thing, okay? You know, find a position which is comfortable for you and that you can stay in meditation. What does good meditation feel like? It's very similar to reading a good book or watching a good movie, and your mind is just sort of relaxed and happy and you're paying attention to this thing, and it's not like somebody's forcing you, and it doesn't feel like an obligation, and it doesn't feel like a Zen thing where they're going to hit you on the back with a stick or something like that. You just enjoy this book, or you enjoy this movie, or you enjoy this music. The feeling that you have in your heart at the best part of a good book when you've been into it for about an hour, or a movie, that's exactly where you want to be. That's called Shinjan. And it's mental and it's physical, and it's where we want to be. You know, you have experienced concentration just that the object was useless. Okay, so you have to find a holy object, and then you have to get into that same happy, cool space, which is like very happy about this object, very intent on it. And not like some kind of thing where I don't want to meditate on this thing and he said I had to do an hour and I still got 6 minutes left. Maybe I could just skip it, you know. Not this like obligation thing. It should be a pleasure. And as you get better at meditation, you'll find Shinjang means your body and your mind start to change and it becomes very, very pleasant to be there. Is that a goal of meditation? No. Okay. You can get to there and you still don't get anywhere that's going to be spiritually meaningful. But it is a byproduct of good meditation that your body will feel great and your mind will feel great. Okay, so we're going to try a little bit of meditation. It's a custom to put in this school. And by the way, if you're going to do this school, do it right. You see what I mean? I mean, people come to me and say, do you teach XX kind of Buddhism? I say, no, I teach the Dalai Lama's lineage, you know, exactly how back to the Buddha, you know. And then they say, well, that's kind of you know, what do they call it? Sectarian, you know? And I say, no, I just want to teach one thing perfectly, exactly the way it's been taught for 2,000 years, you know? And there are other traditions, too, that are wonderful, but I'm not going to mix them up. You see what I mean? I mean, my lama's told me, you have to respect all the other traditions, but make sure you don't mix up your tradition. Make it pure. Do exactly what they've done for 2,000 years, and you'll get a nice result from it, okay? And then if that doesn't fit you, go try another one. You know what I mean? But don't mix up the one you're in, okay? So anyway, put your left leg down first, and then put your right leg on top of that. That's this tradition, okay? If you do a full lotus, which can be very painful and distracting, and so I don't do it, you know, you put your left foot up first on your thigh, and then you put your right foot up first. After you go like this, and you go like this, okay? But if you're doing a half lotus, is what I suggest, you put your left leg down first, and then you put your right leg over it like that, okay? In this tradition, in this lineage, okay? Then you put your hands like this. Put your left hand down first, palm up, and then you put your right hand down over that, like that, and then you touch the thumbs like that, very lightly, okay? And shift them around a little bit until it gets comfortable. I find a lot of new students, and I used to find it very distracting to try to keep my thumbs up, you know? It was like I wasn't meditating on the object because I was trying to keep my thumbs up, you know? Because I thought maybe some lama, maybe I'll go to hell if my thumbs fall down or something, you know what I mean? It's not like that, okay? You might find it easier if you rotate your elbows out a little bit, and then the thumbs come, they start to support each other a little bit, okay? So it also prevents heat from building up in your body. Heat is a very big distraction. If you're trying to meditate in a room that's too warm, it's very bad. It's better to be a little chilly than too warm, okay? But it's not good to be so chilly you catch a cold, because then you can't breathe, and if you can't breathe, you can't meditate well, okay? So anyway, left hand down first, then right hand on top of that. This is supposed to be that very comfortably, if you pushed your thumbs into your body, you would hit your belly button. Now, everybody's belly button's in a different place, I hear. So most of my students find it helpful to put a piece of cloth under their palms, okay, under their hands, okay, just to get it up a little bit. If you're doing a full lotus, the soles of your feet are holding up your hands at the right place. If you're doing a half lotus, your hands are in the wrong place usually. And you might want to, like I usually just wrap up something and stick it there. And you can get something that's comfortable for you, okay? So we'll try a little bit. Last thing to tell you is pay attention to your lips and to your mouth, okay? The lips should be loose, okay? Very, very loose, okay? And they say that the tongue should be just in a natural position, okay? They say don't try to breathe through your mouth unless you have a really stuffed up nose, because your mouth will dry out and then you'll swallow and you'll disturb your meditation. Okay, so they say just put your tongue lightly up to the top of your mouth. Okay, we're going to try about 10 minutes. Okay, and I'd like you to focus on your breath. You know, they say watch your breath. You know, in our lineage, watching your breath is a way to start a meditation. It's not a meditation in itself. It's like when you want to back a car out of your garage, you put it in reverse, you back it out, and then you don't jam it into drive right away, right? You stop, you go to neutral, and then you put it in drive. You see what I mean? Like if you go from reverse to drive right away, it just grinds the gears, right? So the point of breathing in Buddhism, the original scriptures, which I can show you if you'd like sometime, Abhidharma Kosha, 350 AD, Vasubandhu, I think it's in the 7th chapter. He teaches a thing called Ukjumuk, which means watching your breath, okay? And then I'm afraid that later in some traditions it became the reason jetra, you know? It became the whole, they forgot that it was just a preliminary, and it became what you do for 10 years, you know? Which according to all the original books of Buddhism would be a waste of time, okay? Because watching your breath by itself doesn't get you enlightened, okay? It's just a way to calm your mind down, and then you go on to some important meditation, okay? But it is an important practice to calm your mind down, so we'll do it, and you should get good at it. Okay? Last thing to say about it, what it means to watch your breath is not to, like, keep one eye open and see if there's any, you know, dust particles coming and going and stuff like that, okay? It's watching the tactile sense, it's the feel of the air hitting these two parts of your nose, the front of your nostrils, okay? So you're going to take your mind and move it down to the tip of your nose and then go down around here to these two donuts here, okay, to these two rings, and you're going to park your mind right there, you know, like a guard at a movie theater, you know, and you're going to watch people come in and out, okay? So you don't follow the breath down into your lungs, and you don't follow the breath out. You park your mind at the tip of your nostrils, and you're just aware of the feel of the breath as it passes that particular area, and you don't move your mind beyond that, okay? You'll find out that coming in, it's a little cooler, and then going out, it's a little warmer. And that's all. There's no big deal, okay? Park your mind there. Every time you catch your mind wandering, bring it back, okay? And park it there. What will bring your mind off that is usually noise. If someone moves next to you and makes a noise, the mind automatically goes out. Then you have to bring it back in gently. Okay, don't freak out. Say, oh, I'm a bad person. I'm a sinful person. You know, my mind has gone somewhere for 2 minutes. Just, okay, bring it back. Okay, so we'll try. Okay, try about 10 minutes. Sit up straight and take that position and try to stay very quiet. Okay, if not for yourself, then for the person next to you. Okay. Okay, relax a little bit. Move your legs around. Okay. I think everybody looked good. A couple people had very stiff mouth, like that, okay? It tires you out after a while, okay? So keep your mouth, especially right here at the corners. It's a trick, okay? If you keep those loose, it'll be good. And keep your forehead, try to relax it, okay? And some people tend to, especially people carry heavy briefcases around, they tend to be like that, you know? And you have to, sometimes you can go like that and just knock your shoulders down a little bit, okay, before you start. I noticed a few people had their mouths open, and your mouth gets dry, and then you'll start to swallow, which will disturb your meditation. Or you'll slobber all over your clothes, and that's not good either, okay? All right. We'll talk a little bit about what you do after that, okay? There's a specific preparation you do mentally for meditation, okay? After you've got your breathing and you've been watching the breath for a while and you slow down your mind and slow down your breathing, then you go through a special meditation, pre-meditation, okay? According to our tradition, the meditation won't be successful unless you do this, okay? If you just plop down on your seat and try to meditate immediately, you won't be able to meditate properly. You have to do breathing, and then you have to go through some sort of a mental warm-up, okay? So there's a special warm-up you do mentally, right? The first one is to think about what you're doing and why you're doing it, you know? Why are you going to meditate, you know? Everyone came here with a different idea. I remember the first meditation I went to, I was like 18, and it sounded really interesting, and I was going to go, and I had all these expectations of what might happen if I closed my eyes and sat there for 20 minutes, you know? Like maybe I would see God or something, you know what I mean? And you have your own little expectations. Everybody has an idea of why they came here. Everybody has a reason why they came here to this place tonight. It's important to go over your motivation before you start meditating. We call it taking refuge, okay? Taking refuge in this case means think about what you want the meditation to do, okay? Like if you came in here thinking that somehow meditation would make you calmer, you might be disappointed. If we did a good death meditation, everybody should go home shaking, you know, or very uncalm, okay? I mean, that's not, the goal of meditation is not to just be calm, okay? Does it help your body? I mean, it does, okay? I mean, you will be more concentrated at work. You will be physically more healthy if you meditate, but that's not the main reason, okay? You have to think of the main reason to meditate, which is this. If you divide your life, you know, we did it last Friday, good things and bad things. Everybody was giggling at the end, but it was just, I think, because everybody was depressed, okay? You can divide your life into the good things and the bad things, okay? The bad things we don't have to talk about, okay? It's having to go to work. It's having commitments that you don't want to have. It's getting sick when you don't want to. It's losing your friends. It's losing your family. It's having your body change and get older. It's becoming disillusioned with people and with life and with other things and being depressed a lot or sad a lot or something like that. And as you get older, thinking more and more that maybe there's not any great thing to do with this life, you know? I mean, those are the bad things, and you don't need me to tell them. You have them. You think about them. Buddhism said then there's a lot of good things that you have, you know? So far, you didn't get cancer, or maybe you did, I don't know. You know, so far, you're still walking. So far, you're still supporting yourself. You know, so far, you have had some good friends, and some of them are still around. Maybe you did meet a nice spouse or something like that. Maybe you have children. I had a woman call me yesterday. She's a very devoted student in these classes. She's about, I don't know, 55 maybe. And she had two children, a girl and one boy. The girl died about 8 years ago. It almost made her crazy. The boy was killed yesterday in a motorcycle accident. So now she's completely crazy. And she just called me and she couldn't even talk. She sounded like a person from another planet, you know, and couldn't even get the words out to tell me what happened, you know. And so it really is like that. You know, I was thinking, Buddhism says that even the nice things in your life will go away. Even the nice things in your life. And he was young. The guy was young. you know, and even the nice things that you get, which are unusual, they have to leave. They will leave, you know, and then you'll be in that situation. It will happen like that. I mean, every good thing that's happening to you is temporary and it goes away. So when you sit down to meditate, after you do your breathing, you don't sit there and watch your breath for 2 hours, okay? It doesn't help anything. You watch your breath until your mind calms down, which is the point of watching your breath. And then the first thing you do is say to yourself, why am I doing this meditation? You know, what do I want to get out of this meditation? And in Buddhism, in real Buddhism, you want to find out what's making those people die. You know, why this is, she's such a sweet student. It's Linda Waldron who wrote the poem for the class, you know. Sweet, sweet, sweet lady, very beautiful lady. Got up and did a poem in one of the last classes. And you know, brought her son to see if she could hook him up with one of the girls in class and stuff like that, you know. And they just died, you know. It'll be like that. You have to, when you meditate and when you sit down, you have to think, I'm meditating to see if there's some reason why these things happen to people and if there's something I can do to stop it. And I put some kind of faith in this meditation for that. You see, taking refuge means thinking about maybe there's a way to change those things. You see what I mean? And real Buddhism is that. Real Buddhism means that according to Buddhism, you can change those things. She didn't have to lose her son and her daughter. And she will not have to get old and die if she trains herself properly, okay? And it's about the same as learning to play piano. I mean, you have to put the same effort into it and seriousness. You can change those things. You can find out why those things are happening in your life and what you can do about it before they happen. Because after they happen, it's too late, okay? I mean, now there's nothing to do about her son and her daughter, okay? Can't change that now. It got too late for her, you know? She didn't practice enough. She didn't do what she had to do, and now for that thing it's too late. So the first thing when you sit down to meditate is to think, that's why I'm meditating. Okay. Am I suggesting that her son and daughter didn't have to die if she had been meditating properly? Yes. Am I suggesting that she wouldn't have to die if she had been meditating properly? Yes, that's what I'm suggesting. Okay. According to Buddhism, all those things happen because of certain karma. And karma is something you can change and something you can affect. You don't have to die. Your children don't have to die. But you have to change certain things, okay? Then people should be thinking, you know, sounds good. Sounds wonderful. New York Times never reported anybody who didn't die, you know? There's an obituary page, but there's not a non-obituary page, you know, where they list all the people who reached eternal life or something like that, you know? That's a reflection of the realm that we are in, okay? If you live in the world of the New York Times, you know, if you accept the worldview of the New York Times, if you think what's important is what the New York Times think is fit to print, right? You will be in this realm and that's all you'll ever see, okay? There are other beings in this place, on this planet, who have practiced these things and who have changed and who are in a different realm now. And they're experiencing life on a different plane that you cannot see right now, okay? To you, they look like normal people, but they're already gone to someplace else, okay? And because you haven't been meditating or practicing, they still look like normal people to you. You can be sitting next to a person who has already reached nirvana, and they can look the same to you, okay? That's a reflection of your state of mind and not theirs, okay? I mean, they can be already in a Buddha paradise, and you might not be aware of it, okay? So don't think that because you haven't seen anybody, there aren't people already doing it or people who have done it already who are sitting around you, okay? It's not impossible. Okay? That's the real reason to meditate. So first thing you do when you get down to meditate is to think about that possibility, okay? If you accepted it just because I said so, you're not a very good Buddhist, okay? Buddhists are not supposed to accept anything because somebody said so. I'm just saying it's possible, okay? You have to prove it on your own. And you can if you meditate well, okay? So first thing you do in meditation is think about why you're meditating, okay? And think about what we've said. That's what your first meditation should be about, okay? So we're going to practice that for a few minutes, okay? We'll watch your breath for a while. And then when I do this, okay, this is what they do in a Tibetan meditation, you know, when they meditate together. Somebody, the leader will go like that. And that means now shift your mind to the first warm up for meditation, which is to think about why you're meditating, okay? And think about what I said, okay? You don't have to believe it now. But try to think about the possibility that there are certain people, maybe people sitting around you, who have already gone to another plane, who are experiencing life on a different plane, and maybe you could use meditation to get there. So the first act of meditation after you watch your breath is to think about those things. So when I snap my fingers, you're going to move your meditation from where? Those two donuts, okay? Very small, okay? Your whole mind has been focused on the sensation of air touching these two rings right here. Your mind is parked down here. And then take your mind into your heart, okay? And concentrate, think about those things I said, you know. Is it, why did you come here to meditate? Maybe you weren't planning on coming here to meditate on those things, but you're stuck, okay? And think about it. Think about the possibility, okay? There are holy beings in Tibet and people that the Tibetans have taught that have reached very, very high things, very, very different places. And think about that that's why you would like to meditate. They are already in a place where they don't have their family dying around them, and they aren't getting old, and they don't, those things are not happening to them anymore, okay? And you have to think about it, okay? Think about the possibility, and think about that's why you're meditating, okay? And that's all we'll do tonight, okay? After that, we'll stop, all right? We got cookies downstairs, which are the sworn enemies of meditation, but since you already finished, you can have them, right? So, okay. Start on your breath. Make sure your posture is good. Watch your mouth, okay? Don't let the corners get too tight. Don't let it, you know, flop down open. It's really bad in the summer with flies and stuff. And then, but don't make it too tight either, okay? Very natural, very loose, like rubber, okay? Then when I snap my fingers, go to thinking about the real reason to meditate. And we'll do about 5 minutes on each, okay? Okay, relax a bit. The last thing in a meditation is always to, it's good karma to meditate. Because out of all the years of your life, you're at least thinking for a few minutes about the possibility of death and that maybe you don't have to die. And maybe that didn't occur to you for more than 10 minutes in this whole life. It's a very, very good karma just to have those thoughts. Thinking is karma also, not just lying or hitting somebody or things like that. Thinking very holy thoughts is extremely powerful karma. So we dedicate the good karma. You know, you give that good karma away in your mind now. Okay, so we'll do a prayer. And then while we do the prayer, you wish that good karma could help other people. Okay? And that's a custom. Okay? All right.
Sanam